Continuing in mitzvah Shinpei Bav 386, which is the mitzvah of tzitzis. And now we're going to discuss the more colorful part of the tzitzis, which is the tcheles, v'tzeva tcheles, that we know that we have one of the, or more perhaps, of the strings of the tzitzis has to be dyed with a special dye, which is called tcheles, which is a bluish type of color. The exact color is not necessarily that important. It could be, let's say, with different types of shades. But it's a bluish, maybe slightly purplish, according to some type of dye. So the Sefer Chinuch is describing it as the midday sky. So yesterday was a very beautiful day. The sun was shining, and the sky was a very clear blue, and that was similar to the color of the tcheles, although not exactly. Okay, it's similar. It's made from the blood of a fish. Hold on. Slow. So when the Sefer Chinuch here says dag, so we translate dag normally as fish, but it's really any sea creature. It's not. It doesn't mean what we call nowadays a fish, and it's called a chilazon. A chilazon is a snail. She'eno, I'm sort of prejudicing you because the Radzina Rebbe didn't think chilazon necessarily meant snail. She'eno domil ein hayam. That the snail looks like the sea. So the question is, what does it mean that the chilazon looks like the sea? Does it mean that the chilazon is bluish greenish, that the snail is bluish greenish? Or does it mean that, according to some, it means that when the snail is in its natural habitat, it's hard to distinguish from its surroundings in the sea. Okay. Uviyama melach umatsoi. It's found in the Dead Sea. Wait a minute, huh?
No.
There are no creatures that live in the Dead Sea.
Never.
So what's going on with that? So it could be that it doesn't mean the Dead Sea. It just means the great salty sea, such as the Mediterranean. Vitzovin bo pisil shel tzemer. And you use it to dye a string of wool. It has to specifically be wool. Otherwise, the dye doesn't work very well, and that's why all tcheles is wool. So we're going to discuss later, the Sefer Chinuch is going to explain that causes perhaps some problems when you have a linen garment with four corners. So how can you attach tcheles to a linen garment when that would create shatness? Okay, he's going to discuss that.
Do we have
later
linen talisim?
You can.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's unusual.
Yeah.
The minhag is to use
summer towels.
Uh-huh. You, in theory, it's possible. Yeah. Beze yomim rabim li Yisrael lo shamanu misha zocha l'tcheles b'taliso. So nowadays, it's been many years since somebody had tcheles on their talis. Okay, so what's going on? Nowadays, you see people who have tcheles on their tzitzis. So,
are their talis cotton, does it make a difference?
Why?
I don't know, I'm asking. You're talking about a talis all done. Talis cotton, I know there are plenty of them available in cotton or linen.
Oh, a talis cotton in terms of the materials. Right. So the talis cotton. So usually a talis golo is made of wool because of potentially this issue. If you have tcheles, then you have the shatness issue, which is perhaps surmountable, but we'll get there. We'll get there later. But a talis cotton, you have a cotton talis cotton. Yeah, cotton is not a problem.
If you applies to talis cotton.
A talis cotton, yeah. If you do tzitzis on a talis cotton, it has to be wool because tcheles is only wool. But if you don't have tcheles, then the tzitzis strings of a cotton talis cotton could be made of cotton. Mm-hmm. Because the rule is that in general, even if you're just talking about white strings, so wool and linen tzitzis strings will exempt any type of garment. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you don't use wool or linen tzitzis strings, then you have to use a fiber that matches the material that the garment is made of.
Oh.
So on a cotton garment, you have three choices. You could either use cotton, linen, or wool tzitzis.
What about polyester? Do you make polyester?
Yeah. So if you have a polyester garment, you can make the tzitzis out of polyester. There are shittas that hold that polyester is not chayiv in tzitzis because it's not a real fiber.
Okay.
It's a man-made. It's a man-made fiber. So there are sheet
designs. Man-made. Actually, as I recall, there was a sort of a misapprehension by Rav Moshe Feinstein that the way that it was made was by taking a sheet of plastic and cutting up into very thin ribbons. When in fact it's extruded, you know, and made, you know, it's extruded, in, you know, from a non-novel thing, you know, mm-hmm. you know, in the.
They're two different things, right? So some say stam, it's not chayiv at all, which does seem, as you say, to be a little bit difficult. So mm-hmm. we normally hold that a polyester garment would be chayiv in tzitzis. But there's another thing, that what happens if you have a garment that's a solid sheet of plastic, like let's say a rain poncho,
yeah,
with four corners.
What they talk about, what? They talked about leather originally in the literature, right? Like you take a piece of leather and you...
Right, because leather is pater and tzitzis, correct? So leather is not considered a real... it's not a fiber, it's pater and tzitzis. The question is, what's the story with plastic? So Moshe Weinstein held that a plastic poncho is exempt from tzitzis. Mm-hmm. So that's why people generally don't put tzitzis on their ponchos. And you have problems also. You have talus katan that is a very light talus cotton, and it has lots of little holes in it.
Yeah, mesh.
Like a mesh. Oh, mesh type of talus cotton. So some people, that's no good also, that's not a real woven garment.
It's like knit, rather
so,
than woven?
No, they're really big holes. Oh. It's like, it's hard to describe, like a mesh type of thing. Oh. So some people hold that that's exempt from tzitzis as well. So, yeah. So, look, I mean, if you wear a talis gadol and you don't make a talis bracha on that talis gadol anyway, so you don't really have that much to lose by wearing those if you find it uncomfortable to wear a heavier one. But if you make a bracha on that, then you come into a potentially more of a problem.
So this deals mainly with whether or not a four-cornered piece of fabric needs tzitzis of one kind or another. But do you have to wear a four-cornered?
Oh, excellent question. We'll get there. Excellent. Excellent. So so what's the story? So Tcheles was found in the times of the Mishnah and even in the Gemara. And then by the times of the Geonim, it was no longer in use. It wasn't, people lost the idea, the tradition for how to make it. And so nobody wore Tcheles for a very long time. Yeah?
Just a footnote here in the article says the Midrash, the Midbar Rabbah, notes that the identity of the clothes has been concealed. But that was pre-Geonic, isn't it?
Not necessarily.
Oh, I see, right.
What is it? Which Midrash? Midbar Rabbah? No, Midbar was a later compilation.
Yeah. Oh, it is, okay, right.
A later compilation. I don't know exactly when it was. But so it has been concealed. Oh, so some people want to say from that, oh, you see that the Tcheles that people wear nowadays can't be the real Tcheles, because the Medrash says that Tcheles has been nignaz, has been concealed. The simple understanding is that doesn't mean it's been officially concealed and cannot be revealed again. What it means is that they didn't know, so it's been concealed. So you have in recent generations where hopefully we're getting closer to the Geula, to the redemption. So you have people who wish to reinstitute. I feel that it's time for Klal Yisrael to reinstitute the full performance of the mitzvah of tzitzis. It's also relevant for Big Day Kehuna. The priestly vestments in the Beis HaMikdash require the use of tcheles. So they want to reinstitute the use of tcheles and tzitzis. So the first person who really tried to do this was the Radzina Rebbe, who was lived in Europe in the mid-19th century. So he wanted to taina that the chilazon was the cuttlefish. The cuttlefish is like a squid, and it produces a black ink. And he managed to, he got some chemists to make a blue dye out of it.
Which the chemists did, by the way, fraudulently by adding copper sulfate to it.
I don't know if they did it fraudulently, but they didn't follow the halachas.
Isn't it supposed to be that way naturally and not...
Well, even with the snail chilazon, so that it doesn't just come out of the snail's body blue. It comes out clear, and then when you put it in the sun... It turns and you dye the floor.
Natural. I mean,
right. So he thought it was the cuttlefish. He lives in the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, he wanted to say that it was the cuttlefish, and therefore he got these chemists to make a blue dye out of the black ink that the squid makes. Again, not literally the blood. As everyone else says, the blood of this thing. So blood doesn't literally mean the blood. It means a liquid that's in the body of this sea creature. So then it was discovered, so then he died, then it was discovered that, in fact, what the chemist did was, as you say, it was that they added iron filings, and they made a blue dye out of it that can actually be made out of any organic material. So there's no reason that it had to be specifically the cuttlefish, but nevertheless, you have people nowadays who still wear the radzin or tcheles because it's much cheaper than the real one, and they're radzin or chsidim, I don't know, but they waste their money and they buy the radzin or tcheles, even though that's certainly incorrect. So the Beis Halevi, Rav Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, when they went to him to discuss this issue of the Radzina Rebbe's Tcheles, so there are two different stories of how he responded. The one story, which Rav Soloveitchik, his great-great-grandson, quoted, is that the Radzina Rebbe's Tcheles cannot be the correct Tcheles because you need a Mesorah. Or maybe it is. It doesn't. Either it is or it isn't. But you need a Mesorah. You need Tcheles requires a tradition. If you don't have a tradition that this is Tcheles, it's nothing. It's as if we lost the Mesorah. If you lose, like the same thing. If the Jewish people would somehow forget what a lulav was, so and somebody came 500 years later and said, "Oh, I've reconstructed evidence that the lulav is. I think it came from the palm tree somehow. Whatever." They say you wouldn't have to listen to that at all because you need, in order to identify a mitzvah object, you need a living tradition of the Jewish people.
Where does it say
well, then
that?
You're never going to have that.
It doesn't, really. It's but according to that version of the story, so it is, a Beis Halevi would not approve of any tcheles nowadays. It's because of the lack of Mesorah. So there are two problems with that. One of the problems is, as Mrs. Hirsch says, how do you know that? Mm-hmm. Why would you assume that? Why would you assume such a thing? Mm-hmm. And furthermore, it says in the Gemara potentially the opposite. Then in the Gemara it says that in the Gibava Basra it talks about how Rabbi Bar Bar Chana was walking in the desert and he came across the graves of the people who died in the desert during the 40 years of.
And this was the time of the Gemara.
Yeah. So they were still well preserved in the hot, you know, the arid conditions of the desert. So he came back and he said that he didn't want to disturb them. So then the other chachamim said back to Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, like, why? You should have looked at their tzitzis, and we could have determined whether the halacha is like Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel.
But regarding, how did he know? Come on, how did he know?
Regarding, what do you mean? What?
How did he know that they were the people?
I don't know. It's a real chakodesh. So you see that you can, to a certain extent, the archaeological evidence is acceptable regarding the identification of mitzvah objects. You also have the famous discussion in the poskim regarding the disagreement between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, regarding the order of the parshias that are in the tefillin. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of the literature, it quotes, no, they looked in an old Geniza and they found tefillin that were according to Rashi, and the others found tefillin that were according to Rabbeinu Tam, and they try to use this to prove
which is back then.
It's a very old machlokas.
Like, Masada or something like that, something around that they're real archaeological.
So in the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found tefillin that are not, they're often not in accordance with the prescriptions of Chazal. They have other
Chazal of Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam.
No, Chazal at all. They have other parshias like the Ten Commandments and the Tefillin. They have weird things. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. That assumption is somewhat questionable. You need a Mesorah for these things. There are many statements in the poskim regarding Tcheles in particular that if you had clear proofs as to what would be the correct Tcheles, then you would be allowed and perhaps required to restore the usage of Tcheles. So that's problem number one with the Beis Halevi, that statement is not necessarily halachically correct. The second problem with the way Rav Soloveitchik presented his great-grandfather's opinion on the matter is that other sources say that the Beis Halevi said something completely different. That he said, no, the tcheles cannot be the cuttlefish because everybody in Europe knows what a cuttlefish is. Mm-hmm. So if the chilazon were the cuttlefish, they would have said so.
Right.
From the fact that everybody knew what a cuttlefish was and nobody made tcheles out of it, shows that there's a negative mesorah. There's a negative mesorah that this is absolute. There's a mesorah that this is not the chilazon. So therefore, that's the problem. So that, according to that version, So then the Beis HaLevi might potentially accept the treles that is available nowadays.
Isn't there something also about that this particular chalazon, you know, that it was rare and that it was only came up at certain times? And there's, you know, because that's a cuttlefish. I mean, you know, hey, the Italian fishermen, you know, they get it, you know, they eat it all the time, whatever, you know. So
Yeah, that's also true.
So when Rabbeinu Tam decided that the tefillin had to contain different...
Rabbeinu Tam didn't decide anything. What do you mean?
They called Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin?
No, it's not different parshios. It's the order of the parshios. It's different. Uh-huh. He flips the order of Shema and Vayam Shema.
What about the Masorah for the order?
Oh, so Rabbeinu Tam didn't make that up. We call it Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin because we think it's cute that the grandfather and the grandson were arguing. But it's not really... It's not really Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam. It goes much farther back. Even among the Geonim, there are people. There are those who hold like Rashi, and there are those who hold like Rabbeinu Tam. They're very ancient Masoros.
Yeah. Rashi versus Rabbeinu Tam.
Right. It's called shorthand. That's the famous tshuva, the Noda Bihuda, that the Noda Bihuda says, "Hey, Rabbeinu Tam held that the parshis and tefillin are not supposed to be standing upright. They're supposed to be flat. They're supposed to be put flat." So he says, if that's the case,
flat where?
In the
tefillin box. They had wider compartments. I'm not going to explain right now exactly why, but they had somewhat wider compartments. So he said that the parashas and tefillin are supposed to be lying down rather than standing straight up, which is the way Rashi held it, and that's the way we do it nowadays. So Rabbeinu Tam asked the question, hey, if we're making Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, why don't we follow his opinion that the parashas should be flat? Why do we put them upright like Rashi? That seems to be a contradictory. So Noda Bihuda says, no, it's not that we're really making Rabbeinu Tam tefillin that they should be fully in accordance with how Rabbeinu Tam would have wanted it. The argument regarding the order of the parashiyos and tefillin, if you look in the Rishonim, who holds which way, it's almost 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people are machmir to wear also Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, because that's a 50-50 machlokes.
Yeah.
The idea that the parashiyos are supposed to be lying down is basically only Rabbeinu Tam. So that's a das yochid. He's a singular opinion, so he's rejected in that matter. But we can't reject his opinion regarding because almost half of the Rishonim hold that way. So that's why it's not really Rashi or Rabbeinu Tam tefillin per se. Yeah.
What is do you see people in shul wearing two pairs of tefillin? Ever?
Sometimes, yeah. Harry is a frequent visitor to Eretz Yisrael, where this is more popular. But there's more popular now. Some people do it at the same time. That's the original way of doing it, for those who are machmir to Rabbeinu Tam. But nowadays, in tefillin are a bit bigger, so normally people who are machmir to Rabbeinu Tam put on the Rashi during davening, and then after davening they put on the Rabbeinu Tam, and they say over Shema or some other... Well, that's a very old... If we're already ripping on the chumris, so this is not one necessarily one to do.
Is that a chumrah? Or is
this this is one of the most ancient chumris, if you could call it that, that exist in Klal Yisrael, that people are stringent for both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam.
If you're doing it the right way, so you'll do it both ways. But I don't know if it's even a chumrah.
People will keep chumras written secure. I think that's not necessarily, you know.
And it depends. It depends if you... I mean, this is already a very well-established practice. In fact, in the times of the Rishonim, when it was first introduced, this idea of wearing both potentially, by the Rosh and the Maharam. Was it the Maharam, actually? But the Rosh. At least the Rosh. Maybe the Maharam also. So, at that time... So the way the Shulchan Aruch says is that... quoting the Rush, that you shouldn't do this unless you have a reputation for being extremely frum.
Uh-huh.
Because if it's just like some schnook who's doing this, it looks like yuhara, looks like haughtiness,
right.
Pretentiousness.
So you shouldn't
do it. So the later poskim, right, in the last couple hundred years, they say there's no more yuhara about wearing tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam because it's become so common. So therefore, there's no more yuhara, and anybody who wants to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin is allowed to do so, certainly if you do it one after the other, where that's less conspicuous and more normal than wearing two at the same time.
Well, to get back to actually to the chalazon.
Yeah.
The chalazon is supposed to be living in the Mediterranean Sea. Does that make sense? If the demand actually increases, you know, from a probably, could they farm chalazon? I mean, could they...
I think they've tried. Yes, I don't think it's been successful, but they're working on it. Yeah.
Could they decide that they could grow them off in California or something? Or
the, yeah, it doesn't. I don't think it has to be. There's no din that it has to be from the Mediterranean Sea. It's just it's a creature that's naturally found in the Mediterranean Sea. So then comes along 100 years or more after the Razina Rebbe, and he wants to figure out. Oh, there's intermediate stages also. There's Rav Herzog.
Yeah, right.
Rav Herzog. Yeah, yeah. So Rav Herzog was the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, chief Ashkenazi rabbi. And he was, before he was the chief rabbi of Israel, he was a chief rabbi of
Ireland.
Ireland. Oh, yes. Interesting. There at least be a lot more Jews living in Ireland than currently are living in Ireland. Rabbi Wein, in his autobiography, he writes how when he was a little kid in Chicago, so Rabbi Herzog came to visit his elementary school. So he still remembers thinking how strange it was to hear a rabbi with a top hat and a long beard and a long black coat speaking in an Irish accent. So the so Rabbi Herzog wrote his PhD thesis. It was entitled Hebrew porphyrology. It's a word he invented, which means the study of purple. Porphyrology.
Oh.
Hebrew porphyrology, or Jewish porphyrology, something like that. So he rejects the Radzina Rebbe, but he thinks it's a different snail called the Janthina. And he rejects it. But he said this. Now the dye from that is more purple and not blue, so he's not sure. Okay, whatever. So then another. So then later,
I mean, isn't the color of the sky is not even remotely, purple.
Well, it can be black at night.
Yeah, right. So some say darker. Some say it's like,
At night.
Purple.
Sure.
When some say it's like towards the evening sky, it could be purplish, blackish. Okay. So that's why. So then, oh no, I take it back. The Janthina had a different problem with. So then he suggested was probably the correct identification of the Murex trunculus. And he said he had a difficulty obtaining a blue dye only. He could only get a purple dye, so therefore he wasn't sure about the Murex trunculus. So he thought maybe it was a Janthina. Okay. So come fast forward till the 80s, I think. And in the 80s...
1980.
Yeah. Someone from Israel by the name of Rabbi Eliyahu Tavger. And he... succeeded in making a blue dye from the Murex trunculus snail by exposing the dye solution to light. Okay, so that's the Tcheles that is currently sold nowadays by the Ptil Tcheles company and certain other very small operations.
It's really expensive stuff.
Yeah, that's the more expensive one because you get only a tiny amount of dye stuff from each snail, and it's hard to harvest them. Okay, whatever. It's very difficult. So that's why they're much more expensive than regular white tzitzis. So the identification of the Murex trunculus is probably correct, almost certainly correct, because, first of all, you have all these signs in Chazal, so you can read them one way or the other as to whether the Murex trunculus fits the bill. But to me, at least, the slam dunk raya, the slam dunk proof that this is the correct snail is as follows. We know with certainty that there was a dye industry in ancient times on the Mediterranean coast with dye made from Murex trunculus snails. Goyim, we're talking about. It was worn by Greek and Roman nobility.
Phoenician,
it was,
right,
Phoenicians were known for the dyeing.
Probably purple.
And we know for sure that they used this snail to dye fabric in a blue or purple color.
Royal purple.
Right, because only very high socially ranking people were allowed to wear these expensive colors. So we know that. We know that Chazal tell us certain signs, which you could, read one way, read the other way. But the Chazal tell us when they want to exhort us to avoid fake Tcheles, what do they tell us to avoid? They tell us to avoid indigo, which is a plant-based dye. It's totally inconceivable. They never mention anywhere that there is a snail-based dye that you should avoid because it's not really Tcheles. To me, this is an absolutely slam dunk proof.
Could be the snail dye was so expensive. Nobody knew.
No, but they said Tcheles was expensive.
Yeah, right.
And they knew there was an industry, and that's the whole point. Because Kel Elan could substitute for the Tcheles because it's so much cheaper.
And we know that Myrrh Trumpulus was in fact used in by the ancient Phoenicians.
Yeah, because, we have shells.
Because we see the shells.
We see a few shells in the dye. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's inconceivable that Chazal would have that there was a fake Tcheles made from a snail available, and Chazal never once say a peep that
which
you
is
should.
Chemically identical to the.
Which is correct. It's also chemically identical to the indigo, and it binds perfectly well with wool, but not with other fabrics. There are many the indications that it is are pretty overwhelming. So it is pretty much clear that this is the real Tcheles. Again, you can talk about the exact color. My friend Rabbi Ephraim Weinman wrote an article on Hirurim, Torah Musings, where he thought that he wanted to have some proofs that it was more purplish than bluish. Okay, we could discuss the exact color, but anyway, it's pretty clear that it comes from the Murex truncula snail, which is indeed what is sold nowadays by the Ptil Tchelet company. Nevertheless, there are people nowadays, so why doesn't everybody wear the Murex trunculus Tcheles? So I don't know. Mm-hmm. But people really should. So that's really...
There are certainly post-game who are opposed to it. You know.
So there are post-game who are opposed to it because of the perhaps Misora argument that you need a Misora for it.
And if it's incorrect, that puzzle that sits us, I mean...
That's so that's the thing.
Yeah, that's
that if it's... If, as with Sefer Chinuch is going to say later, we're going to... that if the... You have two choices when it comes to tzitzis strings. Either it's lavan, it's a white string. Doesn't mean it's white, it means a non-tcheles string. Or it's a tcheles string. It can't be neither. Mm-hmm. So if it's not tcheles, it means it's lavan.
Mm-hmm.
So it cannot possibly... apostle the tzitzis to wear this tcheles, unless you do the wrong number of strings, which we'll discuss later. So others say they claim that Rav Yoshev was not in favor of the tcheles. So some say some are not in favor because you say, oh, you see that it doesn't exactly correspond with the signs that Chazal gave us, or that the Rambam says or Rashi says or something for the type of snail from which you make the tcheles. But okay, so you might have to work a little bit, do some fanciful work with the interpreting the signs. But that's a much less of a problem, in my opinion, than overcoming the proof that I mentioned before that this was clearly used in dyeing in the Near East, and it was not. The Chazal never told us to avoid it. In fact, once we had a shir lunch with Rabbi Willig. So shir lunch means you get to bring your lunch. Instead of him just talking, you get to ask whatever questions you want. So someone asked him about tcheles. So he says the reason he doesn't wear tcheles is because there's no absolute positive proof for the identification for the Murex trunculus as the chilazon. He says, it could be that it is. There's no absolute slam dunk raya against it. But there's no absolute positive proof that it is the tcheles, so therefore that's why he refrains now from wearing it. So then afterwards, I went. I didn't say this at the time, and I wasn't going to get into the discussion. But I told him, "What do you mean there's no positive proof?" And then I told him that I think about the dye industry, and he says, "Oh, that's a good point. No, that is a positive proof." So far, I don't think he started to wear it. But okay. So
it's claimed, by the way, that somebody from the asked Rav Yoshev about it. He said, "Look," he says, "most of the Haredim in Israel, they can't even afford milk.
Uh-huh.
So how can I go ahead and make them and drive the price of this stuff even higher by making ?"
Right. So that's what they say. Rav Yoshev wasn't intrinsically opposed to it. I think what he writes and some other people say also is, well, how do you know? Just like the Radzina Rebbe was disproved, so maybe this will be disproved also. Come on, the proofs for this are much stronger than the Radzina Rebbe's proofs. And so they say, maybe, So it's not so. Rav Yoshev, so I think he had that idea also, but he also apparently said that it would be too expensive for the Haredi community, which is very strange because if you have to do it, you have to do it. So you wear fewer pairs of. If you can only afford one talus cotton, so you wash it once a year. I don't know what the.
Once a year.
It's very difficult. There are Talmidim of Rav Yoshev. There are Talmidim of Rav Yoshev who do wear tchilas because he wasn't necessarily completely halachically opposed, but just.
Rav Shechter
does. Rav Shechter is not Meshubah to Rav Yoshev.
No, he holds his own. He uses Talmud Mechak of Rasol Veitchik, though.
Right? Oh, yes. So Rav Shechter, so Rav Shechter doesn't know. Right? The Talmud doesn't have to be a parrot of everything the Rebbe says, that he's allowed to have his own opinions also. I mean, he shouldn't go completely against the. If he really feels that a person is Rebbe, he shouldn't go completely against the Masorah, but at certain points where he really feels that the Rebbe is not correct, so the Talmud can't just go like the Rebbe in everything blindly. Yeah.
Are you allowed to wear wool and linen as long as they're different garments? It's shatnez only
at the same time.
On the same.
Yeah, it's only shatnez. Yes, it's only shatnez if it's
the kind of more linen garments. Am I right?
You mean your shirt is linen?
Well, wait a second. Isn't there some business about? I remember the whole thing, some hysterics from my son, right, about he's got a linen kittel, and whether linen kittel going over a wool suit.
There is a chumrah midrabanan that some posts can bring. Which is that if you cannot take off one garment without taking off the other, then it's shatnez midrabanan. That if you have a shirt that you cannot physically remove without taking off a wool, if you have a linen shirt that you cannot physically remove without taking off a wool jacket, so that's shatnez midrabanan.
He's able to contort himself and actually take the steel jacket
off. Okay. I believe it is normative to follow that.
The Kohanim
wore shatnez completely.
Yeah, real shatnez.
That was real shatnez. Yeah, that was the part of the big day kuna. That's we have the.
Why was that?
I gave a drasha once about this. I think it was last year in Kiseitse or 2 years ago. I was talking about how shatnez is not like not kosher food, that it's sort of like spiritually repulsive. I wanted to say, not myself, based on earlier sources, that the pshat in shatnez is that it's so holy that we're not allowed to wear it. Not that it's repulsive, we're not allowed to wear it because it's spiritually repulsive. Anyway, okay. So that's the story with tcheles, and there's also a difference that if you hold that it's not absolutely proven that this is tcheles, and it's only a suffix, a doubt as to whether it's the correct tcheles, so you have a doubt, I think it's also part of the discussion of the Beis HaLevi that he held this, then normally we say suffix derabban, the raisa l'chumra. There's a doubt as to whether you'll fulfill a biblical command, then you have to go l'chumra, you have to go for stringency. So Rav Shechter holds that even if you hold this as a doubt as to whether this is real tcheles, then you have to do it because it's a suffix and you have to go to chumrah. It's a doubt and you have to go to stringency. So other posts can say, no, only suffix deraisa, again, this is a brisker vort, I don't think this is a pashtus, a simple understanding that suffix deraisa l'chumrah only applies if in the end you'll for sure have been yotze a deraisa if there is one. So, for example, benching is deraisa. So, if you forget whether you benched or not, you're not sure whether you benched, so you have to bench again, right? You have to bench again. So, that's because when you're at the end of the day, when you're finished the second benching, so you'll for sure have benched and fulfilled the mitzvah deraisa. But here, even when you're wearing the tcheles, it's not for sure that you're fulfilling a mitzvah deraisa. So, therefore, they hold that that's not sofik deraisa l'chumra. Others hold that there are issues with the number of strings of tcheles. That we know is the Chinuch is going to tell us that we pass like Beis Shammai, that we put four, that the number of strings they use for tzitzis is four, that there are four strings and you stick it in the garment and you double it over. There's a discussion in the Gemara of exactly how to do this, but the conclusion of the Gemara is you take the four strings, you stick them in the garment, and then you double them over, and then it looks like there are eight strings hanging down. Right, math teacher? If you take if you have four strings and you bend them in half, that looks like eight.
You don't need a magic.
So they so the question is how many of those should be tcheles?
Oh.
So if you get the wrong number, that's cuz
the puzzle says
one of the four,
right? It says, you know.
Oh.
He'll leave, you know.
Oh. So certain members of the shir feel that they can read the Chumash and decide what the halacha is. Right? That means you can't cook a kid in its mother's milk. What? It just says that. What do you mean? No, you eat meat and milk. Okay, so they want to say that in the Chumash it says psil techeles, a string of blue, which seemingly means that it's one. So what does it mean? One whole string? Or does it mean one of the eight?
Wait, it can't be. It can't be like one of the eight. We have one of the four.
Four.
Right. It can't be one of the eight.
So the Rambam holds that it's one of the eight.
Right, because you only die half of it.
The Rambam holds you only die half of it. So wow. The Shita.
Really?
So the Rambam holds you. It's half a string, meaning one of the eight.
Oh.
The Ravid and a couple other Rishonim hold that it's a whole string, meaning one of the four or two of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of Rishonim, Tosfos, Rashi, there are almost many, many other Rishonim, hold that it's two out of the four or four of the eight,
mm-hmm.
meaning half.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, so the Rambam Shita is very difficult. He's a lone Shita on that. Half you die, half a string tailors, it seems. It seems extremely bizarre. Right. So there, you can do it, obviously. So the question is that some people want to analyze the Rambam Shita because the Rambam holds that the Tcheles is basically, the job of the Tcheles is to wrap the other strings.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you only need a half, because it's only a half that's wrapping. Okay, whatever. But still, the Rambam Shita seems difficult. He's a lone Shita, so that's why in this Machlokes we can comfortably reject the Lamaisa, reject the Shita of the Rambam. Rav Moshe Mordechai Karp pointed out that the Zohar seems to hold like the Rambam as well, though. So he says, so maybe you follow the principle that if there is a disagreement in Halacha and you don't have a clear conclusion, then you should follow the Kabbalah. So we should follow the Zohar on this. So he says, maybe you should really do like the Rambam. So then I saw him, this is one of the Talmid of Rav Yosha, by the way, who does Mordechai, so I saw him, and I saw that his tzitzis are like the Ravid. It's one whole string out of the four, meaning two out of the. So I said, no, but you wrote in the you wrote in a letter at the Ptil Techilet company that they post on their website, you wrote that you should do like the Rambam because of the Zohar. He says, Ravid Zegamtov. Ravid is also good. So the because there are shitas that hold that the Rambam,
he probably couldn't manage to order like a.
They sell them. The Ptil Techelet sells them. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if he bought from Ptil Techelet. There are like Haredi companies that make smaller runs of the mm-hmm. of the with the more hidurim, potentially more stringencies in halacha. Whatever.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah, well, not usually chassidim. Usually they're litvish, but whatever. Okay. So the fine. So most people, the common. I'm always amazed when I see people like around regular Ashkenazi. If you're Teimani, fine, it's one thing. You follow the Rambam and everything, so you follow him in this also, maybe. But I see like regular non-Yemenite Jews. You look at Tinek and all these places where Tcheles is somewhat more popular. You have a lot of people who are doing like the Rambam. Probably they looked at the Tcheles and the was for sale, and they saw that the Rambam was cheapest, so they do like the Rambam because it involves less dye.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Why would you do? It makes no sense.
No.
You should not. And the tie that sits is also like the Rambam. Why? It doesn't make. I don't know. People don't think about exactly or get upset about what they should do. They just do. I don't know what their friends are doing. What they think is cool. It's really not right to follow the Rambam necessarily in either.
I guess people can't really afford to be machmir and have like one set of tzitzis for each shita to wear at the same time.
Well, that's you're not allowed to do that because the problem with that is the problem is that we know that tchilas is not makib es halavan, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if you have the lavan, the white string, so then you're at least Yotze, the mitzvah of tzitzis, even if you didn't get the mitzvah of tcheles. So if you do too few lavan strings, then you're messed up.
Uh-huh.
You don't have the, you know, you don't, even if this is the wrong tcheles again, which in this case is unlikely.
Everybody agrees about the number of strings.
The point is that according to the Rambam, there are 3.5 lavan strings, and according to the Ravid, there are 3 lavan strings, and according to most Rishonim, there are only 2 lavan strings. So if you do like Tosfos and you do again, even though most Rishonim hold that way, so you can make the argument that you should go like that. Rav Schechter does like that. Rav Schechter does two treles and two loven strings, half and half. That's so Rav Schechter. Belsky also did like that.
Which one do you use?
Oh, we'll get to the wrappings and Sefer Chinuch. We'll get there. So the problem is that you did too few loven. If you do like Toisves, then you do two flu. Then it's you do an extra treles and not enough loven. Right. So then you might potentially have a problem, which is why the common minog, if you can call it like that, of people who wear trilas nowadays is to do like the Ravid, even though that's not the major opinion in the Rishonim, because there are sources in Chazal and Midrash in the Sifri that maybe sounds like that, the different girsos, whatever, but and you eliminate the concern that you have too few lavan strings. And part of the reason is that why don't you just say, well, we go like most Rishonim, the vast majority of the Rishonim. So the answer is that those Rishonim were not actually coming to paskin the shaila of how many trela strings you wear. The discussions were more theoretical. There has the ramifications for the issue of when you have trela strings that are, when the tzitzit strings get shortened or chopped off and they're too short. So it has ramifications how many trelas and how many lavan there are. But they weren't actually coming to say, to paskin this lemaisa, how many trelas strings you should wear, whereas the Ravid was. So that's why there are people who feel very strongly that you should do the majority shita, which is half and half. But the normal practice, I think, is to do the shita of the Ravid. Okay.
Isn't the majority shita now to wear all white tzitzis? No.
What do you mean the majority shita? Nobody holds. You're only supposed to wear white tzitzis. What do you mean?
Many people do. I mean,
no. The issue is maybe this. People are concerned. Maybe this isn't chelas. Maybe we're going to get the wrong number of strings. Maybe I have all these reasons. Maybe there's no misorah. Maybe it'll get disproven. They have all these reasons.
Nobody says l'chatchila, if we knew what the everything you have to know about the chalazon and the string about.
It says in the Chumash, no?
Yeah. You have to,
Not tzitzis hakonaf sil
tchelas. That's in the Chumash. That's not, no question.
I don't see a lot of people. I mean, I don't see everybody's tzitzis, but I...
People are afraid of change. They say, if we put tchelas on our tzitzis, people are going to think we're reform. We're changing the halacha. Ridiculous.
Reform. You see,
it's ridiculous. We changed the halacha. So it's absurd. You should do what it says in the Chumash and the halacha. That's why... somebody suggested last time there was an issue of Yuran wearing trelas. There's absolutely no issue of Yuran wearing trelas, because the issue of Yura, like Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin, only applies when the issue is a chumrah. Oh. If the issue is a chumrah, then you have Yura or not Yura. But if the issue is a
Yuhara,
haughtiness. So that only applies when you're dealing with a chumrah, when you're dealing with an absolute mitzvah deraisa. Oh. No, even though some shitas hold, you're not supposed to. It's not a trilas, but if it's wrong, it's wrong. It's not. If you're dealing with a mitzvah deraisa, you're not dealing with. It's not a chumrah at all.
It's not an extra. So maybe you're really better off not wearing any talis cotton, because this way you're not transgressing anybody's shita.
No. Why? What do you mean?
If you don't know whether or not you should wear.
Well, no, lavan is better. Lavan is better to wear lavan than nothing. I mean, Rav Schechter has a svar actually that if you know what trelas is and you don't wear trelas, then you violate the prohibition of lo tigra, that you're not allowed to subtract the mitzvah from the Torah. So you got to do what you're. Everybody has to do what they're. But the problem is, people are really afraid of change. They're afraid of.
Identification with the wrong group. So.
Right.
Belsky, for example, he wore a talis cotton with trelas. But the Talis Gadol didn't have trailers. If somebody saw him wearing trailers, they'd say, he's all gone up.
I don't know. Like the rabbi I mentioned before, Moshe Mordechai Karp is a pretty charedi, and he wears trailers very publicly. His tzitzis out with the with Talis Gadol. So I don't know. There
on
are
the Talis Gadol or on the Talis Gadol?
Both. He wears on both. There are.
It would make sense that, I mean, all other social issues aside, it would. Makes sense. If you feel that you should do it, then you should do it on both.
Yes. Unless you want to hold that, the point of wearing a talis cotton is not like this. We pointed out last time, there are shitas that only a talis gadol is chayiv and tzitzis, a talis cotton is not chayiv and tzitzis. You say, well, since there are shitas that talis cotton is not chayiv and tzitzis anyway, so we don't have to wear trelas on it. You could potentially say that, but the whole point of wearing a talis cotton is a rejection of that shita, because we assume it is chayiv and tzitzis.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a problem. It's a problem in hashkafa as opposed to everybody should do what their rav says, and hopefully the rabbanim hold that if they really assess the issue honestly, they'll come to the conclusion they have to wear this because it's almost certain that this is indeed the tcheles. Fine. V'tzarech tzvia l'shem mitzvaso. So the tcheles has to be dyed lishma. You can't take, you know, if you have a dye of a vat of dye, and a piece of wool falls into the vat, that's no good. It has to be l'shem mitzvah tcheles. You have to insert the wool. And in fact, there is a rule that the Gemara says that if you test the dye, if you have a whole vat of dye, a huge vat of tcheles dye, and you want to see if it's a good batch or not, and you take a little bit of wool and you stick it in the vat, and you take it out to test it to see if it's good, that passels the entire vat of dye.
What?
It passels the entire vat of dye. Te'ima. It's called te'ima. If you stick, if you do something shelo lishma in the vat of dye, it passels the entire vat of dye. That's why the Gemara says that what you're supposed to do in such a case is you take a little container, like an eggshell, take a little bit of the dye out of the vat, and you stick the wool in that. Oh. So you don't lose the entire vat of dye.
It's all involved with the whole mitzvah.
No, but it has to be only used for the sake of the mitzvah. It's considered a lack of lishma. It has to be lishma. V'ein tovin osan mitzemer. Okay, so now we're switching from tcheles to the issue of making a tzitzis in general. V'ein tovin osan mitzemer anechas bakotzin kishatzon rovtzin beinehem. You're not allowed to make tzitzis from wool that was caught on thorns when sheep sit among the thorns. And not from pieces of wool that are just pulled off the animal. Not from the little unfinished strands that the weaver leaves at the edge of the garment.
So it has to be real shorn virgin wool, then, in other words.
The shearing is not... Yeah, it has to be shorn, yeah, but the issue is ve'enos enos amitzem ar gozol mishal yiranadachas mishal kodshim, that it can't be made of stolen, it has to be, or from yiranadachas, which is supposed to be destroyed, a city that was entirely turned over to Avodah Zarah, and not from holy animals, from that were designated as koronas, as apostles. So the point is that it says that the reason you're not allowed to do this is because it says ve'asu lahem tzitzis. That the tzitzis has to be made from the beginning. If you just take a strand off the animal and you tie that on the garment, that's no good. It has to have a weaving l'shem tzitzis.
Wait, when you shear the sheep, though, is that the...
Wait a minute,
So the weaving has to be l'shem tzitzis. The spinning has to be l'shem tzitzis. It has to be made. You have to make the tzitzis v'asulam tzitzis.
What about the thorns? What's the problem with that?
You can't just take that. If you use that and spin it, then that was spun it. That was good, yeah.
You can spin it.
You can spin that. Point is, you can't just take it, the wool that came off the animal, and make a string out of that.
Oh, that has to be spun, that means. In other words, it's not...
Correct.
It's not that it has to be shorn, then. That's not the, you know...
So, the question is, how far back do you have to start making it lishma? So the Gemara only references tviya lishma, that the spinning has to be done for the explicit sake of tzitzis. That has to be made for the sake of tzitzis.
So you have to have a hechshar on tzitzis?
Yeah, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just take yarn that you buy at the store and make tzitzis out of it.
Oh, yeah. But when you buy tzitzis in the store, how do you know?
Look, if you go to a friend and the friend says, "Hey, I made this string for tzitzis," of course you could use that. That's eidech on them would be sworn. But you have a commercial enterprise; it's normally going to have a hechsher to make sure that everything was done properly.
Oh, wait a second. Can you spin it by machine?
It's the same shot. So it's potentially the machine is a little worse for tzitzis because it says specifically ve'osu that the Jewish people should make for matzah. There are more leniencies, even though, maybe we could talk a little bit more about it next time, but we don't have time enough to go into the whole issues of making mitzvah things by machine matzahs, machines for making tefillin also, but here it's worse because it says the osu that they should make, that's why most people are makbid, even if you eat I can't say the arposkim, the chaznish was machsher technically, because it's considered making if a person turns on the machine. But most people are makbid on handmade tzitzit strings, even if they're not makbid on handmade matzah necessarily. Okay, so most top quality hechsherim nowadays will not give a hechsher to machine tzitzis.
But wait a second, how do you spin it by hand? If you look at a spinning wheel, I mean, is that
yeah,
a machine?
Spin it by hand. Yeah.
But maybe the wheel's machine. I mean, what's the
yeah? But
yeah,
it, that's
exactly.
You, it needs your constant manual labor to turn it. It's not like you just press a button and the electricity spins.
I mean, it's not like you're using your fingers to
No,
it doesn't mean you can't use tools. You could use that's considered to be a tool as opposed to the machine having its own power to do it by itself.
Okay.
That's what the Gemara says that when it talks about shechita. In Maseches Chulin, when it talks about shechita, so it says, what happens if you attach a shechita knife to a water mill? So the water is now running and it's powering the wheel, so that's no good. But if you turn the wheel, so if you cause it to start going, so the first shechita that it does is going to be kosher, but the ones that go that are afterwards that the water is powering is no good because no person is shechting that. So that's
nowadays with the robotics. You know, they're so sophisticated. You could probably have one which would do kosher shechita, except it's not done by a human being.
Right, so that's no good. That's no good. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the tzitzis, fine. So the Gemara only explicitly references that the spinning has to be done lishma, and after all the stages after that, obviously, and the what's the, how do you say shazira in English? The twisting into strands, whatever it is, all that has to be, done lishma. So there are some Rishonim that are machmir that the niputz has to be lishma as well. The niputz is the combing of the wool to get out impurities, dirt. So there are some Rishonim that say, okay, the Gemara doesn't mention that explicitly, but you know, there's also part of the making, and it has to be done lishma. So that's why you see some tzitzis at the store that are labeled niputz lishma. They're more expensive, which means that the that has to be done, even the combing to clean the wool at the beginning was done lishma. And Charlie Greger's chumra is that even the shearing of the sheep has to be done lishma, which is not only his chumra, but it actually was the chumra of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement, that he was makbid that the giza, that the shearing of the sheep should be done lishma, which is, he felt, people don't generally hold that the niputz is ma'ake, maybe it's a hider, maybe it's an extra nice thing to do because this is part of the doing, but and it's just an extra chumrah, the shearing that he, but again, this is completely unheard of nowadays. I think maybe if you really try hard, you could get tzitzis that are giza lishma, but in the stores, you're only, I mean, that's really beyond, but in the stores, the most you're going to see is niputz lishma, which means that the combing was done lishma. But again, b'diavad, this is not an issue, that the tzitzis are perfectly kosher as long as the tvia, the spinning, was done lishma. So tzitzis, the Ramah, by the way, in Shulchan Aruch says that the minag is to do niputz lishma. So lest you poo-poo it, saying, oh, that's just a great zechumra. He says that, l'maisa, that was the minag. Okay. So tzitzis shetava osa goy psula. If a non-Jew makes the tzitzis no good, because a non-Jew cannot make lishma, he doesn't have the expertise to do it for mitzvah purposes. Shneimar daber al bnei Yisrael v'asu, the Jews have to do it. Avaso Yisrael below chavana b'diavid kasher. But if the Jew does it without intention, so b'diavid is kasher. This is the line I didn't understand. I was looking in the art scroll, Sefer Chinuch before, what on earth does it mean? It just told you it has to be lishma, so how could he tell you,
right.
Everybody agrees to it, how could he tell you that if you make it without kavana, that has to be lishma? So the art scroll says, which I thought maybe was the case, but it's a very stark and abrupt transition, that he's changing now from the making of the tzitzis themselves to the inserting them in the garment.
Mm-hmm.
So if you insert them in the garment without explicit intent for the mitzvah tzitzis, so according to the Rambam and according to the Sefer HaChinuch here, then it would be kosher. But it sounds like he's saying that if a Jew makes the strings without intent, then it'll be kosher, which doesn't make sense.
What else would be your intention?
Right. So that's what part of the reason maybe that these poskim hold this way is because it's at a certain point you have what's called stama lishma. That when you have no intention, it's as if you had intention. Why? Because what else would you be doing this for? In other words, if you start spinning wool, you could be making a sweater. You could be making other types of garments, but no, it has to be done for the sake of tzitzis. But once it's already spun for the sake of tzitzis, then you're sticking it in the garment and about to tie. What else would it be? So that's a shtickle. It's a shtickle stama lishma. That's why, like when you paint your tefillin, so the blackening lechatchila is supposed to be done lishma. So we recommend that before you start painting your tefillin, you should say l'shem kedushas tefillin. And then you paint the tefillin. But b'di'evit, there are many leniencies, reason to be lenient if you didn't say this b'di'evit.
Your intention was obvious.
Right, so because even if you just, whatever, l'maisa, this is already tefillin. It's like a stam lishma. There's no other reason you could possibly be painting it. It's not like it's not like cloth, where you could be making parchment for a book or whatever, but you're making it for tefillin. Okay. V'shamati migdolim sh'asiyah einak shera b'noshim. This quotes here the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, that women, again, this is for sure referencing the making of the tying of the tzitzis rather than the making of the strings. Women are allowed to make the strings. But he says that the tying of the tzitzis should not be done by women, which is the shita of Rabbeinu Tam that most posts can disagree with. Mm-hmm. But this is the shita of Rabbeinu Tam, the mice we try to be stringent for, lechatchila, that it should be specifically a man who makes the tzitzis, who ties the tzitzis, rather, because he's the one who's obligated in the mitzvah.
Supposing a woman took on the thing to wear tzitzis, could she then make them herself?
According to Rabbeinu Tam, no, because they wouldn't be tzitzis. She wouldn't get any mitzvah out of it. It's like if a woman...
it's considered to be better if you tie your own tzitzis.
Right.
So but the problem is, it's like tefillin. Let's say, okay, whether or not a woman should wear tefillin, we can discuss. But if a woman wants to voluntarily accept upon herself the mitzvah of tefillin, and she wears tefillin that were written by a woman, so that's, if she makes a bracha, it's a bracha levatala, and it's not a kiyama mitzvah at all, because the women are not, it's not tefillin. It's not tefillin if it's written by a woman, because women are not halachically.
She's wearing...
It's not tefillin. They're boxes with the things written, but it's not tefillin. So here too, according to Rabbeinu Tam, lemaisa. No, but here the difference is by tefillin, no shittas hold that a woman is allowed to write them or make them.
No shittas hold
that a woman is allowed to write or make tefillin. But here, Rabbeinu Tam is basically a singular shita that holds that women are not allowed to tie tzitzis. So lemaisa, a woman could tie her own tzitzis because she could rely on the other shittas that disagree with Rabbeinu Tam that a woman is allowed to tie
a
tzitzis.
Melon on a son can't make tzitzis.